Okay, so we're going to unpack this Texas death penalty case. It's Garcia v. State. And what's really fascinating about this case is it kind of forces us to look at how complicated legal strategy can be, especially when it bumps up against these really sensitive issues we see in the justice system, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You sent over some really detailed material for us to go through, which is great.
Yeah.
And we've got like the guidance, the case brief, legal brief, like we've got the whole nine yards. So our goal today is to kind of like go through all of that and give you the key insights, right? We want to figure out exactly what happened, why it matters, and kind of put it all within the context of the law. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sounds great. And you know, one thing that I think is really important to remember about this Garcia v. State case is the stakes are so high, right?
Absolutely.
It's a capital murder case.
Yeah.
So everything is heightened, right? The
Yeah.
scrutiny on the defense strategy, the court's rulings on ineffective assistance of counsel, all of that.
Right. And that kind of leads us to the real, like the heart of this, right?
Yeah.
So the case is about Juan Garcia, and he was convicted of capital murder. And this all came from a really violent crime spree back in 1998.
Right.
But here's the kicker. This is where it gets really interesting. So during this sentencing phase, his own defense team, they actually brought in testimony that connected race and ethnicity with whether someone's going to be dangerous in the future.
I know. Wild, right.
It's wild. Like, did you hear me right? I mean,
Yeah.
that's exactly what happened. And this is what ultimately led to the claim that he got ineffective assistance from his lawyer. But here's the other thing. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, they upheld his conviction and the death sentence.
Right.
So that's what we're going to try to figure out. Like, why does that happen? How did that happen?
Well, you know, I think that that point that you just made, the defense's decision there really brings up a huge question,
Yeah.
right? What on earth was the strategy there?
Yeah.
I mean, you would think that you'd want to avoid bringing race into this, you know? So it seems very counterintuitive.
100%. So before we get into all the legal stuff, let's back up. Okay.
Okay.
What did Garcia actually do? Can you give us a rundown of the crime spree and the trial? Really, we want to know how did we get to this point where this testimony was even a thing?
Okay, yeah. So back in the late summer of 1998, Juan Garcia, he was 18 at the time.
Okay.
He and three other guys, they go on this crime spree in Harris County, Texas.
Wow.
And we're talking multiple aggravated robberies.
Okay.
And then, very tragically, the murder of Hugo Solano.
Oh, wow.
So essentially, what happened was Garcia tries to rob Solano. Solano fights back, and then Garcia shoots him multiple times.
Oh, gosh.
And yeah, Solano died.
So that's heavy stuff.
Yeah.
So then we move on to the punishment phase, right? And this is where the defense, they make this really unexpected move with their strategy. So tell us, who is Dr. Quijano, and what exactly did he say that got this whole debate about ineffective assistance going?
Okay. So in the punishment phase, the defense, they bring in this clinical psychologist, Dr. Walter Quijano,
Okay.
and he actually says to the court, among dangerous people, minority people are overrepresented in this population.
Whoa.
And then he keeps going and says, and so blacks and Hispanics are overrepresented in the dangerous, so-called dangerous population. And just to kind of drive the point home, he also states, those factors that are biographical are, of course, not eliminated, your gender and your race.
Oh my gosh. I mean, hearing it straight up like that, it's hard not to think that a jury would hear that and be biased, right?
Yeah.
Especially when they're deciding if Garcia, who we know is Hispanic, is a danger to society. Like, that just seems like a really, really bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely problematic. And that is exactly why Garcia is claiming that his lawyer messed up, that it was ineffective assistance. However, the defense team, they say it was a strategic move.
Okay, so let's dig into that for a second. What was their reasoning? Like, on the surface, this just seems completely backwards. What were they hoping to achieve?
So they argued that bringing in Dr. Quijano was this calculated move to get ahead of the future dangerousness issue.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, the prosecution was definitely going to bring that up when they argued for the death penalty, right?
Yeah.
The court's majority opinion actually later speculated that the defense may have been trying to lay out all the factors a juror might consider, even the negative ones related to race, and then argue that despite all of that, Garcia wouldn't be a future danger if he was in prison. So the thinking was that prison could actually control Garcia's tendencies, and that would counter the state's evidence of his past crimes.
So they were trying to preemptively address this potentially racist line of thinking that some jurors might have already had, like headed off at the pass.
That's right.
Seems like a super risky move.
Oh, yeah. It was a big risk.
Yeah.
And Justice Price, he actually addressed that risk directly in his concurring opinion.
Okay.
He agreed with the court's final decision, but he was really uneasy about that whole racial testimony thing. He warned that no matter what the defense's intentions were, that kind of testimony could totally bias the jury.
Right.
And he argued that when a defense strategy involves something as sensitive as race, you have to be extra careful because the jury could easily be prejudiced without even realizing it.
It's a really subtle but important point, right?
Yeah.
Like something can be technically legal but still be ethically questionable and just lead to unintended bias.
Exactly.
Okay, so now we're at the big legal question. Did Garcia get ineffective assistance from his counsel?
Mm-hmm.
For everyone listening, especially those who are still learning about all these legal standards, can you break down the test that's used for figuring that out? I think it's called the Strickland test, right?
You got it. So the Sixth Amendment, it gives everyone the right to effective assistance from their lawyer, right?
Right.
And way back when, the Supreme Court, they set the standard for proving ineffective assistance in this case called Strickland v. Washington. And this test has two parts to it. First, you have to prove that the lawyer's performance was below a reasonable standard. So basically, a competent attorney wouldn't have done that.
Okay, so they messed up, basically.
Right, but it's not enough to just say they messed up. You also have to show that this mistake actually hurt your case. Like, there's a good chance the outcome would have been different if the lawyer hadn't messed up.
Got it. So two parts. Bad lawyering, and that bad lawyering actually changed the outcome of the case.
Right.
And so the Texas court used this Strickland test on Garcia's case, but they seemed to give the defense a lot of leeway with their strategy, right?
That's right. They really emphasized this presumption of competence. You know, like lawyers are assumed to know what they're doing.
Right.
And they said that strategic choices are generally protected unless, and this is key, unless they're so outrageous that no competent attorney would have engaged in it.
Outrageous. Wow.
Yeah. And here's another kicker. If there's no clear evidence about why the lawyer made a specific choice, the court will just assume it was strategic if they can come up with any possible reason for it.
Wow. Okay, so even if a strategy seems really flawed or even harmful looking back, the court will still hesitate to say it was ineffective assistance as long as they can imagine why a lawyer might have done it.
That's exactly how it works. And in Garcia, the majority said they could see how the defense might have been trying to address every possible issue, including race, even if it was a long shot, to avoid the death penalty. So, because they could imagine that strategy, they didn't say that the lawyer's performance was unreasonable under the Strickland test.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack, but I think I'm following.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about Justice Price, right? He agreed with the outcome, but he had serious concerns about that testimony about race.
Hmm.
So, what didn't he like about the majority's reasoning?
Right. So Justice Price, he agreed Garcia's conviction and sentence should be upheld, but he wasn't so sure about the whole race strategy being completely unbiased.
Yeah.
He was really worried about bringing race into the courtroom, even if it was part of some bigger plan. He said it could still influence the jury in a negative way no matter what.
Okay.
He basically said, be really, really careful when you're basing your strategy on something like race, because you could really bias the jury without even meaning to.
Yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, it might technically be legal, but is it ethical?
Yeah.
And are you just accidentally reinforcing some really messed up ideas?
Exactly. And that brings us to another important part of what the court decided, the evidence itself.
Okay.
So the majority opinion, written by Justice Holcomb, said that Garcia's history, all the robberies and the murder, all of that was enough evidence on its own to say he was a future danger.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter about Dr. Quijano's testimony.
So basically they were saying, okay, the race stuff might have been bad, but there was so much other evidence showing he was dangerous that the jury would have reached the same decision anyway.
Pretty much. They said any reasonable jury would have seen Garcia as a future danger based on what he'd already done.
Okay, got it. Now, there was also that thing about jury instructions, right?
Yes.
Specifically about Garcia's past crimes, the extraneous offenses.
Right.
Why didn't the court require the jury to be specifically told that they had to prove those past crimes beyond a reasonable doubt?
Okay, so this is where it gets a little tricky with Texas law. As long as the jury gets instructions on the special issues, Those are the big questions they have to answer during sentencing, and future dangerousness is one of those. And they're told the state has to prove those issues beyond a reasonable doubt. They don't always need a separate instruction for each little piece of evidence.
Okay, so it's like they don't need to be told, prove this specific robbery happened beyond a reasonable doubt. But they do need to be told, you need to be sure beyond a reasonable doubt that he's dangerous in the future.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the gist of it. Those past crimes are part of the bigger picture, but the real focus is on the final decision about future dangerousness.
Got it. It's definitely nuanced.
It is.
Okay, let's go back to some of those big points that really stuck out.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dr. Quijano saying minorities are overrepresented in the dangerous population. That was just rough to hear in a courtroom.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the court saying it had to be outrageous conduct to prove the lawyer messed up. That seems like a really high bar for ineffective assistance claims.
Yeah, and I think those two points really show the conflict in this whole case.
Definitely.
Dr. Quijano's words, they highlight this really problematic connection people make between race and crime. And the court's focus on outrageous conduct, it shows how much power they give to defense lawyers and their strategies, even when those strategies seem really questionable.
A cautionary tale for lawyers, that's for sure.
Definitely.
It's like a tightrope walk.
Yeah.
You have to be a strong advocate for your client, but you also have to be ethical and avoid bias.
Absolutely.
What this case really shows us is that even if the court says a strategy is okay, there can still be big problems with it.
Right.
Garcia might have gotten the technical legal win, but the whole thing just felt wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's the bigger takeaway for our listeners today.
Okay, so what should they be thinking about after hearing all of this?
Well, Garcia v. State is a really good example of how hard it is to prove ineffective assistance of counsel.
Especially when the defense can come up with any kind of strategic explanation.
Right, even if it's something you'd question later on. It also shows how race can still be a huge problem in the legal system, even when it's the defense bringing it up. And Justice Price's opinion, that's a reminder that even if a legal strategy seems okay on the surface, it can still reinforce bad stereotypes and biases.
That's a powerful point.
It is. And you know, this case really makes you think about what reasonable professional assistance really means, right?
Yeah.
Is it just about the legal strategy, or is it also about thinking about the bigger picture, the impact on society, and the potential for bias?
That's the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something everyone listening should be thinking about as they move forward in their legal careers.
Yep.
Like, how can defense attorneys be strong advocates while still being ethical and aware of how their actions might affect things like racial bias?
Big questions.
Huge questions. And Garcia's case is a reminder that being a good lawyer isn't just about knowing the law. It's about understanding the responsibility that comes with it, right?
100%.
Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot today. Garcia v. State, it's a case that stays with you. It definitely makes you think about the choices lawyers make and how those choices can have a ripple effect way beyond the courtroom.
Agreed.
I hope this has given everyone listening something to chew on as they continue their studies.
Yeah.
It's a complex case with a lot of layers, and it's a reminder that the law is about so much more than just winning or losing.
Mm-hmm. It's about justice and fairness and how all of that plays out in the real world.
Well said. Thanks for breaking it all down with me today.
Of course. Glad to be here.
To everyone listening, thanks for joining us for another deep dive. We'll catch you next time.